Welcome to Q's Corner. I'm joined by two very special guests who I've known for many years, many conversations, many situations, many actions, and a lot of history has been spent. We're gathered here today, not to make this sound like a prayer, but we're gathered here today for the simple fact that we want to give an educated opinion on a multitude of various different topics. The world is meant for us to put our voice out. So here we are. I'm joined by two brothers. All three of us were born in California and migrated to the South and share the principles that are raised through our elders, which has coursed us through life through this day. So I will give them the opportunity to introduce themselves. I'm Q. I'm your producer of this podcast, Q's Corner. And one of you all have free reign to introduce yourself.
Sure. Appreciate you, Q. Snow here, one of the cousins, aka brothers of yours. And I think it was interesting. I like how you touched on the fact that we came from the same place, ventured out into our own, and coming back to this table adds a great a great deal of perspective through diversity from our journeys. So,
yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. It made me remember how we used to introduce ourselves, you know, from Cali to Georgia. We're really the only family in our generation that can say that, from Cali to Georgia. Yeah. My name is Aziz. I'm the middle child of my family. And I think the middle child here in this family, right?
Junior is the middle child.
No, Junior's the youngest.
I'm the youngest. You are.
Thank you. Yeah, so I've been on the show before, but I'm glad to be back. And, you know, talking about something new, something prevalent, something different. Yeah.
Great. Thank you all for being here. How are you all managing life through this whole COVID crisis and, you know, the way that the world is changing and unfolding through our eyes? How are you all managing to deal day to day?
Sure. Snow again. I think I'm managing pretty well. I think the main difference in the typical standard would be the disease or the sickness that's spreading. Mm-hmm. In terms of the polarized environment and everything, you know, I think those that are in the same and the similar skin to mine are very familiar with the happenings now. Surely they're magnifying for those of opposition, but yeah, in terms of how I'm managing through this, probably 50% better than the most.
Okay. No sense of panic or urgency. Yeah. You're just going with the flow.
Yeah.
How about you, Z?
Shit, man. You know, it might be a cynical thing to say, but I think that right now I'm managing well compared to, you know, the hardships that I was dealing with prior to. So, I mean, it's a bittersweetness, right? You know, people have a chance to realize what's important and honestly reflect and remember some habits that I think have gone out the window.
Yeah.
Like washing your hands.
Simple things, yeah.
Washing your hands when you go into public places, just washing your hands in general, covering your mouth when you sneeze, covering your mouth when you cough. It's amazing how many people were not thinking about that thing.
Absolutely.
I guess the biggest struggle right now is that whole 6 feet distance. When I find myself in a public place, you know, I'm immensely looking over my shoulder, like, you know, back up a little bit, please. you know, and you got to practice on figuring out how to say that, you know, to a dynamic audience. You know, a lot of people that are, you know, staying close to me in this situation, there's really no way to put it. It's a hard thing to say, you know, when we're all trying to survive, having to remind somebody else, you know, come on, be considerate of the conditions. Other than that, though, I'm living. I got to say that the government has looked out for the people in this regard. It was surprising, you know.
Sure. Yeah. So I agree. I think the government has stepped in to a degree. And let me go on record and just say I was the one that was opposed to any germs, any form of fashion in the very beginning. Or some of my family members, this may be a revelation. I've been trying to tell them that for 38 years.
The most germaphobic.
Yep.
No, but even the coughing and the sneezing. If you don't sneeze in your arm, vampire. If you sneeze in your hand, that's nasty. Yeah. Sneeze in your damn arm. Do a vampire cough.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, I think to your point, those that are walking around, you know, pretty vocal and from a demonstrative standpoint, not wearing masks, opposing the whole notion of it, I think that's a little obnoxious. I think it's very inconsiderate to those that are taking this seriously. And even if you truly, truly don't believe this is a true epidemic,
still practice.
Have respect and courtesy for others' beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
That's in the Constitution, the belief system,
that's real.
And being open to the belief system. And this whole pandemic thing and your view on God, and they're pretty aligned.
The other thing that's surprising to me that kind of gave me, you know, the inclination that this is a real thing was the fact that, yes, companies are getting money due to shutting down and having to halt their businesses. But it's so much money by corporations that are being lost and people's businesses that are being lost that it's a real thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes I have my days. I fluctuate. I'm like, oh, this is some BS. But I never, even though I may feel like that in certain ways, I still practice what is required with wearing a mask. Or like if somebody had a meme up and it's like you feel like a superhero when you walk out into the world because you get out your car and you go into a store, you're like, oh, shit, I forgot my mask. So you go back and you go grab your mask. And, you know, we used to wonder why people in China would like wear masks all the time. And here we are. But we just fight it. Like,
you know, in China, it was more of a pollution thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But still, in a sense, the same idea, right? Like, it's for your health. Put your mask on. I got to remind myself, like, I carry a mask with me, but I also have to remind myself to put it on. And when I see others with their mask on, it's a good feeling to have to know that it's right here in my pocket. Let me just go ahead and slap this bad boy on. To what Snow was alluding to earlier about, you know, other people having different beliefs and still being considerate enough to wear the masks for those that actually are taking this virus pretty seriously. That was an interesting topic because if you don't believe in it, it's going to be kind of hard to follow that standard, right?
Absolutely. You got to truly believe there's a threat out there.
But when our president is making such light of the situation, it's, you know, it's kind of hard not to have that thought or the idea yourself, right?
Yeah.
But it depends on how seriously you're taking our president.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. You're absolutely correct.
Along with our governor.
There are those, man, there are those, and our governor is an example that will follow Trump blindly. Me as a black man didn't follow Obama blindly, but that doesn't mean that he was not the person for that job and he wasn't what America needed. The pros outweighed the con for any human being. But Donald Trump, for some reason, he has blind, dogmatic followers.
They did a excerpt from The Daily Show. I can't remember the name of the particular member from The Daily Show that did this at the...
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Where you interviewed the people voting.
The things that were coming out of these people's mouths, they weren't surprising, but they were very entertaining. They were very entertaining, but it was also a bittersweetness.
Somebody said something like, do you think that... Donald Trump is going to get Obama's bin Laden. I'm sorry, Osama bin Laden. Look, all my right wing.
Way back when.
Don't flip my words, okay? But yeah, Osama bin Laden. They were like, yeah, he's going to get him. It's hilarious.
Yeah, that was genius. I don't know if he did the one for this year. Yeah, right? I guess he's going to wait till every state votes, right? Like, that's what he's waiting on. Because we haven't seen the one for 2020. We saw the one where Trump first got in office. I can't wait to see the new one.
Yeah.
I doubt we're going to see that different in people.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And then, oh, my bad.
Oh, no, by all means.
Yeah, I was just thinking about on this topic we're talking about. the polarization of the world and the country, you know, there's something that's been pretty heavy on my mind that I've been kind of like
three-headed dragon,
holding it in, wanting to throw it out.
What's
out
that?
Out through my words. And that's how corporate America, there are no conversations, no discussions. I'm hearing nothing about corporate America. I'm hearing about the entrepreneurs and the black-owned businesses. I'm hearing about the marginal black people, the women that are getting a percentage of a man's wage, all this and that. But you don't hear anything specifically about navigating through the waters of corporate America in such a polarized world.
Tell us a little bit about that.
And this is kind of catered towards the conversation we were having on the way over here. It's a sleight of hand, you know, where I show you this to get your attention. Mm-hmm. All the while I'm doing something else.
Absolutely.
To distract you from that. In corporate culture, I'm right there with you.
It's so much pressure. Mentality.
Yeah.
It's a sales mentality.
Yeah. It's so much pressure. And I don't want to make it about race, but it is to a certain extent that as a black man, you have to work extremely hard. You have to walk this cracking ice day by day. And you have to, and this was even on our previous podcast, mm-hmm. where you have to communicate in their language, or, you know, you have to fit in a square peg in a round hole.
You have to be language? Disarming.
Yeah.
They don't have that. They don't have the burden of having to be disarming in front of their audience, but we carry that burden. So how much is that going to dilute the authenticity? And when we're speaking,
right.
It's like, yeah,
we're
yeah.
pushing an initiative. Yeah. When we're putting so much energy into being disarming. That's the part that you know, see every day.
When you say disarming, what I want to ask you is, why do you feel like we need to be disarming?
That's a really good question. I mean,
it's probably a different direction from where we're going.
That's a great.
That's what I think
that's
about.
Right in line with
it. Well, I think about the fact that the numbers are at such a contrast in an executive meeting or a board meeting or a department head. When you walk in there, you are one or two out of 20 or 30 individuals that are not Caucasian.
Right.
You know? I think we had the KKK come down in Newnan, Georgia, and we had an incident command. The people holding the incident command is they were all diehard Trump pushers,
blind followers,
absolutely.
So to speak.
They were all red blooded, gun toting, hard hitting Americans,
set in their ways.
Yep, and so the people in that, the only variance from that was one Asian lady and myself. And what they were doing is they were shooting out projections of all of these flags that were considered intolerant, quote unquote. They had the Nazi symbol. They had the Confederate flag. They had a bunch of pictations of like the KKK and mm-hmm. just different hate groups. And what they were telling us was they want us to be aware through this climate on what's considered hateful.
Huh?
Like me and the Asian lady have to have a lesson on what's considered hateful by these descendants of the founding fathers.
Did you know that there was American Asians that were granted reparations here?
I can believe that.
Yeah, I think I have caught wind of reparations being paid, but not to the black community.
I can't remember when it was, but it was in the sum of $20,000 per person.
It was due to, the attack on Pearl Harbor?
I'm not going to argue with it, but my first thought when I got wind of it was that, well, hell, we better not be getting no damn $20,000, because you know they just approved reparations in North Carolina.
Yeah, I did see for that city, I did see that.
Now, so
but what do the reparations look like?
Well, they're still devising.
Yeah,
right. They're still devising the bill, right?
Oh, so it's just a dollar? It's just money?
Well, we don't know. We don't know.
Still,
they just approved
it,
the idea of reparations
being
granted. No, we there was no budget established. So what I'm my first thought was that okay, so if the American Asians got $20,000, right, for whatever the cause was, forgive me for being ignorant on that whole. I should have paid a little bit more attention. But I'm just thinking about, you know, 400 years of slavery, 400 years of labor. Mm-hmm. You know, $20,000 per person, if that was, you know, what it was to be, would be a slap in the face, right? And even when these reparations were granted was at least decades ago. And $20,000 was a lot more back then at that time than it is now.
Yeah.
So what would those be? So I'm curious to see what happens in Charlotte.
Go ahead, Snow.
Go ahead.
What was the value of 40 acres and a mule when they established that?
Great question.
That would be my first question. What was the true dollar value? I mean, it's interesting that they're doing it the dollar value. I would be more intrigued into, you know, forgiving certain debts, student loan debts, medical bills, things that we are entitled to as human beings, yada, 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 yada. But a dollar amount?
I feel like they would hope that we would focus on the now. You know what I'm saying? Because the now is very static, very volatile. Right. So the value can be misconstrued. Well, not misconstrued, but it can be emotionally accepted. You know what I'm saying?
Now, the dollar amount, I kind of see your point on that, you know, versus just paying us this lump sum of money or putting the value of the 40 acres of a mule in relevance to today versus doing something for the people.
Right.
Such as canceling student loan debt and things of that nature. Now,
an opportunity.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
And that's the thing. You give us a boatload of money, we are a race of spenders. The black dollar stays in our community.
Some would argue that that's by necessity or by.
We're
consumers.
A lot of brothers who will walk around.
We have a lot of things that we have never had access to.
That generation. But we are a race that utilizes material things to define us and to give us that self-esteem boost. Minister Louis Farrakhan has always said that there are brothers who are walking around here that are white men in black skin. We always equate their dream and what they have accomplished to being that of what is defined as success.
Mm-hmm.
When in essence, it used to be what was good for the brotherhood and the next betterment of the community.
Mm-hmm.
My last point, when the Jewish have children, they have children and they decide they put things around the child. And Minister Tony Muhammad in California, who runs the mosque out there in the West Coast and everything, preaching Islam, he says that they place a child and they put objects around the child. And whatever that child goes to, that's what they do. They put hang pictures and they naturally
motivate.
And incline them to. We don't necessarily do that. What do a lot of, and I'm not putting single females out there or single brothers, what do? We have children and we slap a tablet in their face and allow the internet to raise them.
I can be the first to attest to that. I was raised by a single mother of three. And the biggest thing that she pushed our way was school, just finish school and hopefully go to college, right? Like it was a lot of presentation.
It's interesting because I have a different perspective, but I want to hear yours.
Yeah, so my perspective for mom was just get good grades. It wasn't necessarily specific classes, and getting into those specific classes was just, this is what you're supposed to do, so this is what I need you to do. Have you done your homework? This, that, and the other. Where I don't have firsthand experience in this, but I got to assume that there are situations where parents are actually getting into those subjects with the children, finding out what those gifts are. Like you said, they would put things in front of them and to inadvertently wax it would be advertently encourage them, right?
But to go along with your point, it's hard for people to do that nowadays. I'm not saying that they just don't do it.
I'm with that.
No.
They're working.
They got to work. They got to provide. They're working. Put everything on the table. They got to make sacrifices. They don't have the opportunity because the cost of living is continuing to rise when the pay for these jobs haven't risen in the last 20, 30 years.
We had a conversation about this. I was listening to this politician talking about the unemployment rate has been increased. I don't know if he had, I think he said by 90% in the past year. my first thought when he was talking about the unemployment rate, well, I'm thinking, well, what kind of jobs are these people working, right? And if the unemployment rate the unemployment rate has actually been affected in this way, what about the cost of living, right? Those two go hand in hand.
We should.
So if we're talking about wage increases for people that are working low labor jobs, which is what he was talking about, well, what about the cost of living increases? How much does that change, and why is that not automatically attached to this conversation? Because if you know what you're talking about, if you're talking about these types of subjects, wouldn't you be encouraged to talk about them hand in hand politically in the political climate and the economic climate? Like that would have to go without the other. I mean, that would have to go with the other.
Yeah.
Minimum wage.
Yeah.
Hasn't increased since I was in high school.
$7.25. And you're right about that, you know, but the thing I think that the powers that be that overrule this country, Martin Luther King wasn't necessarily killed for his ideals in terms of the progression of black people.
No, he had an epiphany.
He had an epiphany. Before he passed away, he said, I feel like I led my people into a burning house.
Yep.
But the thing is, he changed his directive from being that of race to economic status.
And then what happened?
The moment that you have, he got killed, of course. And the moment that you have the rich and the poor, or the poor uniting and thinking and getting outside of the mundane, that's a problem for the high upper class.
Yep.
And that goes back to the dollar. We're raising all of this cost of living, the rents and
money.
And they wonder why we society.
Yeah, but
talk about money. You talk about your perspective. With
yeah.
Mom. Yeah.
Yeah. The capitalist. I believe that capitalism works.
Okay.
I believe capitalism works. I'm not a Republican, but I believe capitalism works. I think capitalism works because the consumer ultimately decides where the money goes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The power in capitalism is the consumer. And if the consumer feels like the government should hand these people out while they make economic decisions, it looks as if we're idiotic, spoiled children with their daddy's wallet. I think we have to take our own ownership into where our money goes. I think that's what Malcolm X said. That's what Martin Luther King started taking his mind toward. When you talk about economic distribution, the choice lies in the consumer.
So
people talk. People, when the people speak.
People spend, not speak.
When the people speak, the bottom line is set.
When people spend, the bottom line is set.
So you're saying, okay, the best way I want to put this is that as far as where your money goes, that's where your power is. Right? Where you spend your money.
Where the economy is stimulized, that's who has the power.
Okay.
That's why Bezos and Amazon is loaded.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have brick and mortar. They have to shut down during the COVID. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, when you get bored from being home all day and drinking, you're going to go spend some money. You get your little $1,200 check and you go spend that shit
with
Bezos.
That's how you stimulate Dick.
You understand what I'm saying?
No, I get that.
We choose how this market is stimulated. We give the power. Now, if our standards are so high, this is my belief.
Yeah.
If our standards are so high that we're not willing to sacrifice a certain level of quality so that we can over time build up a company that doesn't have as much resource as Bezos or someone like Trump had when they wanted to go and venture out
and grow,
then that's our decision. But what Martin Luther King and Malcolm X was saying is not about us just becoming entrepreneurs. It's about us supporting our businesses.
Supporting our people, yeah.
It's supporting our businesses. We have all kinds of entrepreneurs. We just don't patronize their businesses.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. That's why you never see a commercial for a Chinese restaurant. You never hear anyone of the Asian dynamic have a leader, but yet and still their community thrives because it stays within. I had a point that I was going towards, but
you want me to speak while you get that?
Yeah,
together.
Go ahead.
No, I get that. That's what Martin Luther King and that's what Malcolm X was talking about, was investing in our own communities.
Mm-hmm.
That was a brother I was listening to the other day that he's really old. I can't remember what his name was, but he was through Malcolm X's movement and Martin Luther King. He was through the Black movement when we were strong, and he basically pointed to building an economy. Right, first level starts as the people. Right, we're figuring out how to support one another.
Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Keep money in the communities. Second level, that's where the politicians come in, right? That's where the people that are speaking for us are actually supporting us, right? He basically defined it as layers. You have the economy, you have the politicians, and then you have the Black businesses, you have the commerce. Like, you have this structure, but you're keeping it in-house, right? And that's mainly what Malcolm X is talking about, though. He was talking about taking it out of this country because obviously segregation was not going to work and living united was not going to work.
Marcus Garvey.
Whenever we talk about Malcolm X, bro, I get passionate, man, because it's like his voice resonates in the back of my mind, man. Like, everything that he was saying is prevalent today.
And that's, yeah.
You can listen to a clip of him talking and you wouldn't know if we're talking about Trayvon Martin. You wouldn't know if we're talking about Sandra, Sandra Bland. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't know because it's so prevalent today.
It's timeless.
The point that I was about to make, and it coincides with what it is that if we had unity and put our ideals together, and I'm going to relate this to music, you listen to what's going on today, mm-hmm. The music is promulgated to hit on our insecurities and have us think a certain way and hate women. Now, I'm not sure if you all are familiar with, of course you're familiar with Irv Gotti, Damon Dash, and my guy from Houston, Jay Prince. They were in the process of establishing their own record company and distribution and putting out the music that they needed to for the betterment because they weren't feeling exactly what the message was. That's why all of them hate Jay-Z, because Jay-Z told them what was going on. And all of a sudden you get all these tax liens and everything.
They hate Jay-Z because Jay-Z was telling them what was going on.
He told the Jews exactly what they were doing, that they were planning this. So that's why you got Irv Gotti with these tax liens and Dame Dash. They tried to ruin this man. And the only one who survived is Jay Prince because he has other business ventures. But that alone was coincided with Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's the worst thing about us as people, everything that we want to do, we talk about that.
I've been saying this for years.
Here's the blueprint.
Loud. Why do we make so much noise? People say, why do you send me messages? Why don't you post? Because it's not for everybody. It's not for everybody. It's to stimulate you. And it's to stimulate you. It's not for everybody. You're literally telling the opponent your move.
Did you feel that way when Mike came out with coronavirus? He was like, I don't want to be here. First of all, I just want to let you know, I don't want to be here. I didn't want to come today.
Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. Do you feel
like... He was speaking on the actual riots.
Okay. So you don't feel like that's an example of it? We need to gather, basically. We need to mobilize.
Yeah, that's what he was saying. He's saying, don't do it like this. Do it like that. Now, yeah, that was public, but that wasn't a public forum that he put together. That was an opportunity.
That was a general idea.
That's different.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, not even that it was a general idea. It wasn't an idea. I didn't say I'm going to blast this to the world. But here's this forum where Mayor Bottoms is speaking to these people doing these riots. And now I'm in a position where I have to tell you how to do it the right way. That's different from people like Charles Barkley and jumping on that
video.
Don't
talk about that, bro. When I watched that video.
You know what I mean? That's different than the dude from Friday, the big swole dude. What's his
name?
That's different from Terry Crews jumping out and throwing his 2 cents into something that's counterproductive. You know,
being
Black Lives Matter to Black Lives Better. Nobody even said that. That was a provocation. That what Mike. Jones, I mean, Mike, what's his name? Killer Mike did.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't provocation. That was like a reaction and a response to kind of get them
back
on the
right
track.
I thought it was strong.
Absolutely, it was strong.
I thought it was strong. And he didn't.
But the point Dude was making is the fact that.
We talk too damn much.
Yeah, we talk too much. It was strong, but it was necessary. It wasn't a let me get in the room and tell the whole world what
I'm
saying.
But you know what I think? I think that has to do with it. I think it has to do with us not used to being having a voice.
Yeah, but that's an enabling.
I'm not trying to enable it, right? So I rack my brain to think like, why do we do that? You know, and I feel like it's the people that you hear that are doing that so often are usually the people they have probably been ignored for the longest.
That's an enablement. That's a reason why. That's to say, okay, I understand why you're doing it. We all understand why.
Yeah.
Let's get to the fact that you need to stop.
You need to stop.
Because the stakes here are high.
You know what I'm saying? You and I'm like, okay.
Well. Yeah.
And you're like, well.
like the stakes are high right now and you messing up for you messing it up. You're truly messing this up. So we can set you up with a counselor and about your daddy issues and mama issues. But for now, just stop.
I got to say this, though. Killer Mike, when he put it out there, and it may be just me that feels this way, but the specific vernacular that he was using,
mm-hmm.
They were alarming words to where it's like, let's say you're FBI, we need to go ahead and keep a tab on this guy.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Like the way that you put it out there.
Absolutely.
There's going to be a tab put on.
I completely agree with you. Yeah.
But sometimes, depending on the audience, you got to say what you need to say, right? You got to say what you need to say. And I feel like he had a strong message out there. But again, I feel like we're tackling a three-headed beast right now. We're talking about the coronavirus. We're talking about the racism that exists right now. And we're talking about voting in a new president into office, right?
The racism right now, that didn't change.
It didn't change, but is it heightened?
No.
No, the level of awareness,
but for us, this is nothing.
I have seen nothing different at all, except for the fact that people are showing it on YouTube. I've noticed no difference. This is what it's always been.
I agree with that. The thing that I appreciate the fact is that we're having a conversation, right? And that sounds watered down even as it leaves my tongue, right? But we're having the conversation. And I guess my biggest hope right now is that we don't keep the conversation to just talking about one incident. We're not talking about police brutality only. We're talking about the banking system and loans that were denied to our people. We're talking about where was in Alabama, where we were exposed to syphilis, right?
Oh, yeah.
We were exposed to syphilis.
Tuskegee experiment.
So we're talking about the medical system, right? So we're talking about the banking system. We're talking about the medical system. We're talking about our policing system. We were affected at such a dynamic angle that you and I were talking about this earlier, Junior, conspiracy theorists. Am I a conspiracy theorist? Maybe in your book, right? But do I have the right to have this theory? Hell yeah, because there were some extreme things that were done to us.
But what's the theory? I mean, we all have the right to question everything that's going on.
Uh-huh.
But if you have a legitimate theory and you can walk us through the pathway that led to that theory.
Okay, so that too is dynamic. So I guess the reason I bring that up is that my theory on most things, when you're talking about the government and the people, or corporate America and the people, that the Black people, that the African-American people have been segmented in such a way that whatever the hell it is you guys are talking about, I'm thinking the worst about how it's going to affect us. That's the perspective that I have.
So, question, perspective pertains to how you feel the general Black people think or how you think?
How I think.
Okay, got it.
Now, okay.
yeah, that was a bit.
No. This is just to put another battery into it. As far as things changing, nothing's changed. And the only thing about it is the alarming thing about it of everything that's happening in this country, we're only catching 5% because a lot of what's going on is not being videotaped or put out there in the world for us to see. But I would say that it's unfortunate that we have people who, and I'm saying our people as a race, who are so caught up into what the world tells us to think, where we lack the ability to think for ourselves, or we choose to be, for lack of a better word, a nigga be a nigga, like act a certain way, think a certain way, value things a certain way, versus actually sitting down and seeing the consciousness. Like, there's no, and I hate that I keep going back, I'm not going to say I hate that I keep going back to the Nation of Islam, but the way that they behave and the way that they treat them, each other, and the way that they lift each other, it's an example that we are so caught up in the white man's game that we look at every brother as a potential threat inadvertently.
Absolutely.
I mean, do you think it was engineered that way?
Of course.
Yeah.
And that's, and we see it in the music. We see it
again.
In
the, I know that's to the why. But this is what it is. So how do we get out of it?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And
no, but right. But you have to acknowledge what the highlight is, right?
I just want to give a shout out and say my brother is one of the most caring individuals you'll ever meet.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to my brother as being one of the most sharpshooters you'll ever meet. But no, realistically, you think about the highlight, right? You got to think about what's highlighted to address what's highlighted, right? So that's my thought. Now, I'm not trying to sit there and give an excuse by any means.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to give praise to, well, not praise to, what I'm trying to acknowledge is that, okay, so this exists. Why does this exist? If you can't find the why, you ain't going to find anything else.
I completely agree. But here is my spiel on that. We've established the why hundreds of years ago, over and over again. At what point do we hold ourselves accountable? You know, when you make a mistake and you fail at something,
mm-hmm.
and someone will say, stop feeling sorry for yourself and get back out uh-huh. there. At
I get
what
that.
Point do we get back out
I
there?
I get that. I guess what I'm trying to deter us from, right, because it's done easily, Candace Owens is a perfect example, is what it deters us from is demeaning our people, for one, demeaning our people and saying this is how they are, because that's not how they are. When you talk about social science, that shit gets in depth, right? And when you would affect an entire race, I think we need to acknowledge that social science.
There's going to be some nuances there.
Right, exactly. So
absolutely.
When we acknowledge that social science, we can see the capabilities. And when you see the capabilities, you know the magnitude in which you need to address those capabilities.
Right.
That's so, all I'm saying.
And what's the magnitude?
It's extreme. We were talking about this earlier.
So we know if there's an extreme magnitude. So now what's the plan? And so can I like to digress into a conversation I had with a friend of mine earlier.
Fair enough,
today.
Marvin.
All right. So I sent her this video on Charles Barkley when he was like, we're trying to get on their level and we shouldn't be trying to fight racism and anger with racism and anger and all this other stuff, right? And she said to me was, it's just sad that we're trying to fight to get on their level. I'm so paraphrasing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I know. And what makes it worse is Charles Barkley just told the entire arena and audience that we're trying to get on their level. How embarrassing is that? And number two, Charles Barkley goes in this spiel about what we should do. So my response to her was, the fact that we can't have a conversation behind closed doors, I'd liken it to dogs fucking outside in front of people. Which alludes to us being the savages that they perceive us to be.
You know what mom said to me one time? I remember. Were you finished? I mean, were you?
Yeah. I'm blown by that shit.
No, I get that. I mean, that's vivid. But what she said to me was that she had to remind herself. She had to tell herself on certain occasions that I can't look at our people doing something and keep thinking about the fact that that represents all of us. I had to stop myself from thinking that way.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. And we talk about this one guy, right? But who would be the one to sit there and spotlight him? It would be the weaker individual from the other party.
Absolutely.
It would be the weaker individual, the one pandering, the one trying to grab some type of ammunition, because who would be so ignorant as to sit here and submerge an entire race from one person? Right, it's being a certain way from one person.
You have to be narrow-minded.
You got to be very freaking narrow-minded.
Yeah, we got people out there like that.
Yeah. We got a lot of people.
Hell, that's like that. Majority of the people who voted are like that. In 2016, are like that.
Yeah,
and then some.
You know, the unfortunate thing to with Charles Barkley, and great on TV with the NBA and his show, he's paid to make those statements. And it's to a point, whereas it's selfishness over the better part of your fellow man, where he says, well, no matter what, you know, we're still going to be in the same position. I might as well accept this check. I'll take it. I'll take the criticism from people who you are my people, but they can't do anything about it because they're not going to pay me. So I'm going to go ahead and be selfish and do that. That it is cowardly, but that's just the reality. And
you know, why do you call it cowardly?
Cowardly, well, because you don't stand on your own principles. You know, it'd be different if he come from this place of never dealing with racism.
I don't think he works like that though.
He comes from the South, and he spoke out on racism. But when the money gets low, the hungriness shows.
Okay, so and I know you. I can feel it. But when you were talking about Charles Barkley and saying whatever he needed to say because so and so, whatever parties that were involved were willing to pay him to. I think that they were willing to pay him to speak his mind because they knew how his mind worked. I don't think it went with him saying a specific thing because
let me say they do that. They do that in corporate America.
They exploit
that. I'm not saying that particular situation.
Barkley the ignorant.
But people do that. Not they. People are opportunists, and they know who to put in front of the camera to carry the appropriate narrative. Why do they know that? Because the person was in their office talking that shit earlier.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Unfiltered.
Yep.
Talking the shit in alignment with their ideals.
Yeah.
We could spin that. That's what they say after they leave the office. You know, we can spin that.
But to play devil's advocate, dude, one of the thoughts I had was the fact that Charles Barkley, I didn't say this about the text, everybody has different perceptions or different
experiences.
They have various approaches, is what I was looking for, is what they have. Everybody has various approaches. And the fact that they can't go behind closed doors and discuss the optimal narrative, that's what separates, that's the whole savage mentality. The fact these Republicans voting for Trump can't stand Trump, but they got to keep Republicans in office. So they're going to stand by, they're going to try to hold on to those high level principles. And so we all want the same thing, even though we don't want it the same way. We got to have that conversation in the back so we can have a consistent narrative is all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Charles Barkley and others, they don't have that conversation.
Well, I just want to say this.
We're fragmented. Our desires are fragmented. So we don't have that power because we're fragmented. That's what I have to say.
I get it.
Opposing folks who's going against the same thing he is, just in a different way. He was name dropping. Why are you doing it like that? Why are you arguing in front of the kids?
Drew, I saw the video. We were looking at the video at mom's birthday party, and I think I made a comment to you like that motherfucker is embarrassing. He's embarrassing.
You know, with everything that was just said, I just believe that everyone has a price. Everyone can be bought out.
Agreed.
The one thing that corporate America, you know, people who want to control the narrative within this country, has a blank checkbook.
Uh-huh.
And everybody can be bought. You think Terry Crews would be making these statements if somebody wasn't paying him? You think that Stephen A., you know, who kills us on First Take talking about the black man, but the moment he speaks about women, he's, you know, suspended, but he could talk about a nigga all day.
Yeah.
He's paid.
Yeah.
You know, and it's people who are in the forefront of the narrative. I do love the essence of this conversation. The only thing that I wish that we as people can kind of come to grips with is a solution. But maybe people are working on a solution and they're fortunate to understand that they're not talking about it. and putting it out there for the world and the masses to manipulate and to divide and conquer.
That would be nice if that's
because what's happening. Yeah, any black leader that we have, he's either killed or brought to ruin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do we have any black leaders?
I can't think of one. I think we have black advocates. When it comes to leaders, people that really stood behind what they believe in, and spoke to the people and fought for the people and lived behind the words that they spoke. Nah, man, they shoot them down.
Or they kill
them. We got social media leaders now, man.
Times change. We got to change with the times. We have no idea how impactful, specific genres can be. I mean, I think things are changing at such a fast rate. Like, we talked about the coronavirus. We talked about racism. We talked about the presidential race, right? Mm-hmm. That's a three-headed beast right now that we're dealing with. Racism is on the forefront of it, all. Because even if we go to the coronavirus, we're talking about the people that were affected the most by it. Now, they can sit there and stray the argument or shift the argument to the poverty-stricken, right? But why the poverty-stricken, right?
Yeah, but all these three-headed beasts are all outward. There are things, at the risk of sounding a little bit like Terry Crews, I don't agree what he said. All that shit is outward. There are things we can do as well. And that goes back to even the conversation about, do we have any leaders? Mm-hmm. There are things where we can control. We can't control the outbreak except to protect ourselves. I'm not going to let them leverage that as another crutch for my development. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And then what were the other two things? I just know they were all outward. Racism is outward.
Politics.
I can navigate through that shit. It's going to be a hard fight, but we have to navigate through that in order to lead. We have to navigate through that shit.
No, I get it.
We can't be looking through Instagram and Facebook saying, I know what's going on, and now I'm going to have a voice. That's good for advocacy. Nothing. You didn't say anything to that sort. I'm just saying.
No, right.
That's advocacy, but that's what we need. We need to look at ourselves. What are we going to do?
And where's the
leadership?
That is a great.
Where's the action?
Okay. So well, funny. You all have been in tune with the podcast from. Well, you all have been tuned in to Q's Corner. I'm here with Z and Snow, and I thank you all for tuning in. I thank them for giving their opinions and perspectives on things surrounding life. And yeah, this is the rebirth. So you all spread love, not germs. That's my word. And be one to which you want to see the change in the world. Much love and blessings, and y'all take care. Peace.